the reaction to static objects, blah, 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 performance, blah, blah, blah.
There you go.
Pop.
I've never been able to do that. Never.
This is Strange Angels, KBH Global Radio's continuing conversation on the arts and contemporary culture. This is your host, Glenn Zuckman, coming to you from the KBH studios at Long Beach State University. Welcome to another week of conversations with the visual, performing, and literary artists who are shaping our 21st century cultural landscape. Today on the program, it's String Theory, Following the Threads of Feminism with the LA Art Girls. I'm joined with approximately 4/30ths of the LA Art Girls, Nancy Pop, Ann Harz, Kim Schoenstatt, and Essie Barnett. Nancy, Ann, Kim, and Essie, welcome to Strange Angels.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry. Should we dive in and hear an audio piece from the LA Art Girls before we try to figure out who exactly the LA Art Girls are, besides the four of you?
Sounds good.
That's great.
This piece is called Woman Thy Name.
Oh!
You know, little things.
Femme, female, feminine,
female,
femaleness,
femininely,
female rhyme,
feminine
rhyme, female suffrage,
feminine,
women
female,
suffrage,
womanly,
womanish,
femme,
female,
effeminate,
femme,
ladylike,
femme,
feminine,
soul,
female,
female,
feminine,
female population,
feminine,
the feminine lead in a drama,
feminine rhyme,
feminine allure,
female rhyme,
feminine wiles,
femininity,
femininity,
virtue,
womanish,
feminism,
feminist,
womanish tears,
feministic,
effeminate,
feminized,
an effeminate
feminized,
walk,
feminizing,
feminizing,
ladylike behavior,
feminization,
feminine ending,
femme fatales,
girl, girl Friday, girl guide, girlhood, girlish, girl scout, woman,
women,
woman is fickle,
brought out the womanhood,
womanhood,
womanish,
womanized,
womanized,
womanishness,
womanizes,
womankind,
womanlier,
womanlier,
feminist,
womanliness,
women
suffrage,
female suffrage,
woman suffragist,
womb.
You're listening to Strange Angels on KBH Global Radio across the globe at www.kbeach.org. That was LA Art Girls' Essie Barnett's piece,
Woman Thy Name.
You know, all the reference books in my little library, I don't think I have that one.
This one is a very special one I found in an alley, abandoned in an alley in the early 80s in Venice Beach, California.
Wow. What a find.
Good timing, too, early 80s.
It was a fine time. Mm.
Good times.
Well, okay, let's not get... Now, nostalgia, we always get carried away about the past, and we forget, for example, 1980s. No LA Art Girls.
It's true.
Couldn't have been that great a time.
True.
We just didn't know each other then.
Oh, interesting
point.
Grade
school.
So did you pre-exist before the formal formation?
That's a great question.
Very interesting idea that perhaps the LA Art Girls existed but just had not personally been in the same time-space continuum.
So there's a notion, like, for example, with language that language predates language. And that the impulse finally brings it forth. And so do the LA Art Girls predate the LA Art Girls?
I totally think that that's true because I'll tell you why. Because I was just thinking how I mean, I knew that they existed before I joined. I started coming to meetings last summer. And yet I felt, even before I started coming to meetings, I felt like I kind of was that thing that I was seeing, you know, with these other women that I was seeing doing in things, and when I understood how women come into the group and then sometimes are fluid, don't stay and then come back later on, and it's very fluid in that way, I think that it absolutely is the case. Hmm.
And as a formal organization, you actually just had your second birthday?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With a cake and tea.
Cake and tea.
And party.
A princess cake.
Yes.
I believe.
Now, actually, cake and tea figures prominently in the LA Art Girls, not just on birthdays, but...
It's more of a convenience.
It's just more of a perk.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, so that's like LA Art Girls swag.
It's a perk of one of the LA Art Girls meetings is to have wine, sweets, tea, and other
goodies. I don't think I've ever been to a meeting or an LA Art Girl event of any sort that didn't include sweets.
Do you put the wine in the tea?
Amazing.
Or?
Yeah. People go all out.
We enjoy our meetings there.
Okay, so have I already said what is the LA Art Girls?
Oh, the LA Art Girls are a loose affiliation of women who are all working artists pursuing careers in the contemporary fine art field. Yeah. And we meet and go and have studio visits with each other, help each other with projects, do joint projects, do group projects.
Go see art together.
Go see art. All sorts of things.
You know, there's a phrase in the LA Cacophony Society's sort of statement, which I wonder, you know, they refer to themselves as a group of creative malcontents, which you all may or may not be. But the phrase that I was thinking of from the Cacophony Society that I wondered if it applies to you is at the end of their little thing, the tagline is, "You may already be a member."
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Probably many others floating around there who may drift into the orbit of the LA Art Girls for a time and then drift out. We have this very fluid kind of way of communicating. Groups pretty large, about 30 or more. And
and girls can choose to do projects or not to do projects. And it's not an issue if you choose not to participate in something.
So there's no membership requirements or...
No, but when
other
we did
than
the
spankings. No.
Oh, Essie. when we were
secret
when we
rituals
the,
revealed
that was Essie, just
that,
so
yeah,
you know,
by the way, that was Essie, if we didn't make that most clear. At the Getty performance, we had these young women come up and say, "I want to be LA Art Girls. Where's the application?" And Angela and I just kind of looked at each other like flabbergasted, because, you know, I don't know.
No one's ever actually applied.
I don't know. You just kind of get invited to come. And if you want to go, you go. And if you don't want to go, you don't go.
And you put in as much effort as you can or want to. And
this is actually really interesting, because this came up. I think the first meeting I went to was about this question of, you know, how do you become included in the LA Art Girls, and what constitutes being included? Is there it seems like we have a lot of communication, especially via email, and that if you're engaged and you're talking, and by talking I mean sending emails back and forth, then you're engaged in it and you're involved if everyone hears your voice.
Yes.
So here's my personal agenda item that I'm now going to give to you.
Uh-oh.
Get over the email thing. Wikis. Set up the LA Art Girls Wiki. It's better, because then it's all collaborative and archived, and that's the way I want to see you go.
Thank God Kim did.
We were looking, actually, at the last meeting, we were just talking about how to better communicate. So
we
Wiki
have a,
might be
we
an
have
option.
A website.
We
yeah, we have a website and a blog, but maybe wikis would be better.
But I love the wiki page that Kim made for this.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's gorgeous. And it's got...
with the help of Pefkin the cat.
Yes.
Schrodinger's cat is part of the string theory of following the thread of feminism.
Well, I definitely don't want to derail ourselves into a techno space, but what I love, you know, the old kind of web page was... You can look, and now the idea is that
you can make.
Every reader is an editor.
Yeah. You can look and touch.
But I also wanted to ask
that
you know
Kim.
why? So you're outing each other on inappropriate comments.
that's how it's
very
set up,
similar right? to a meeting.
I wanted to ask, you know, why do we need an LA Art Girls, and why don't we have a New York Art Boys?
Oh, they already exist.
Oh, is that what it is?
It's called the LA Art World. It's called the Art World in general.
Long, long time.
The New York Art Boys would be the Art World.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think in that sense also...
And they're the ones who have all the power and the money, but none of the fun?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, okay. They have a lot of fun.
There are some really powerful women in New York. And
no, that's true.
So, but I think as weird as this is going to sound, it is a difference between the way that men work and women work. For example, women as a gender... die from heart attacks more often than men do.
I didn't know that.
And what they've figured out is that women have heart attacks in a completely different way than men do. So what was happening is women were going to the hospital saying, "My chest, I feel like there's an elephant on it." And they would say, "Oh, well, there's nothing in your blood work that shows, and oh, do you have no pain in your arm? You're not having a heart attack." But what they figured out is that, yes, women have heart attacks, and it's just in a different part of the heart. It throws out totally different chemical signals.
And medicine is based on the male body.
Right. And medicine is based on the male body. And so I think collectives are helpful for women because, first of all, it's difficult to work in the art world as a woman for various reasons. But then it's also nice to be able to sit and chat with other women about the work.
And also to address the question of why do we need an LA Art Girls? I think, Anne, you've talked about this, how it started as women who had finished graduate school, who are in the art world in Los Angeles. And I noticed, because I spend a lot of time in Europe, that there are studio groups that you know, once you finish school, there's a support system in place. And in Los Angeles, there is not. Once you finish graduate school, hello, goodbye, you're on your own.
They throw you off the boat and into the ocean and swim, honey, swim.
So I think that began as that, like, well, I really miss that dialogue. I miss that opportunity to talk about work and with other people who are in my field. And
actually, it's funny talking about people in your field, because in so many fields, I think probably art included, you know, that's often obviously a competitive thing. You got that gallery show that I wanted. And
and
so people often don't want to share information or contacts or secrets or techniques.
And one thing we have been talking about was this idea that model for the way this group has been functioning, at least so far, is on a model of generosity and how we give each other opportunities to work on collaborative projects together, different performances, or curate each other into different shows. And also in the fact that we go to each other's studios and we talk and we make friends and are all concerned about one another's success. And I think that
so it's a young women's network.
It's about being generous, and it's about, you know, wanting the best for the individuals in the group. But I think that's important.
And it's an inclusionary model, like,
exactly.
You know, like
unlike those old boys.
That I think that's where it gets different. It's like these young women who come up at the Getty and say, "Oh, where's the application? I want to join." Well, there is no application. Start coming.
Right, come to a meeting. Give us some FaceTime.
Well, actually, I'd love to talk about the event you did at the Getty. It was an all-day conference with some academic papers that had some amazing content, was maybe a little dry from my palate. And then you all did these incredible, a whole bunch of interventions from, you know, giving people tattoos of the Getty tram with flames, you know, as it was burning down the hill, to actually, no kidding, in the entire time that the Getty Center has existed in Los Angeles, my single greatest Getty Center experience, one of the LA Art Girls took a bed, which I think itself has this long history of visitors and things, but took a bed and put it on the huge grass that's sort of sloping down from the buildings, and invited people to come sit in bed and kind of hang out for the hour. I was sitting there for an hour, and it was just such an incredible Getty experience. So
that was it. We had actually three beds up at the Getty in different locations, and one bed was for storytelling. I think that was Claudia Boucher brought her bed up to the Getty, which has a long history. Her father was a Getty scholar, and she was telling stories about the bed and inviting people into the bed to tell stories, and had a little game set up in the bed with words. And then Lee McCarthy brought her bed up, and she had kites, and you could jump on her bed and fly kites with her and run around in the yard. And Kristen Calabrese brought her bed up, and you could get hugs in Kristen's bed. And it was really, really fantastic. I agree with you. Like, I was lying around in Kristen's bed on the Getty, just watching in this beautiful, incredible place, and feeling really, really lucky.
So I guess I must have been in the Claudia bed then.
Yeah.
And she was talking about that bed. Her father had all these guests come through their homes over the years and had stayed there, and all of that history. But also, you know, the Getty, I don't know if I want to say it's a formal place, but I mean, I guess just it's very institutional and all, it's stunningly beautiful, but it's still so, I don't know, perfect. And then here's this bed in the middle of this huge lawn overlooking the city, and it was a hot day and there were parasols. And
isn't that just the best art?
It was incredible.
When it was like really nice.
Interactive.
When it goes into a site and it completely alters your perception of the site.
Yeah.
And it, and with this particular piece, it made this place really playful. Nancy here did a piece where she carved a piece of travertine out of foam, and we painted it, and we played catch with it, and that was a, and ran around the Getty, you know, hauling this big piece of travertine over our heads and following tour groups. And there were some really great moments. We put it on the lawn and a little girl came up and just started pushing it. And it was just, it was, you know, and just like rolling it and tumbling it. And there's just some like really, really beautiful moments.
You know, there's so much travertine in Los Angeles since the Getty opened.
Yeah. The last 10 years, it's in more. Everybody's kitchen.
Uh-huh. Now it's in my studio.
It's the travertine decade.
You still have my travertine in your studio.
Actually, do we have a we have an audio piece from your Getty adventures?
Yes.
This is the Scroll Symphony.
When
this
we were invited up to the Getty to make a proposal for this symposium, the girls made, I think it was like over 100 different proposals, and then they selected certain ones. And so what Anne's going to read is the score for the Scroll Symphony, and then we'll play the audio.
Scroll Symphony. Hand a large roll of butcher paper to someone at the end of the row in the audience. Ask them to hold on to one end and pass the roll to the other end of the row, unrolling the paper the whole time. Listen to the Scroll Symphony and leave the paper there.
It works now.
This must be the sound of paper unrolling.
Well, there were a lot of paper. It was, it's interesting to think about the context.
This is the big Williams Auditorium at the Getty.
This is actually in their, not the Williams Auditorium.
The other one, the downstairs.
Downstairs the auditorium, just downstairs from the main kind of entrance area from the Getty. And, you know, they've just been listening to one of those dry academic papers that you were mentioning earlier. And so then at the end of that presentation, suddenly you see rows of women come in the sides carrying these gigantic rolls of paper, one at each end, and taking the end of the paper roll and handing it to someone and asking them, please pass this to the person next to you, so that it literally covered the entire audience with paper over their heads, and people started to play with it. And then all of a sudden, as soon as they had reached the far end of the audience, we'd rip the paper off of the roll and run out. So just leaving them with the paper.
You know, it was fascinating, and I suppose kind of a generous piece in the sense that it was, I was sort of almost at the very bottom, very near the front. And so I had all of these rows behind me of people with paper, and I kept waiting for you all to come back and sort of give the next instruction. Okay, do this, or okay, now we're going to do that. And it really was just for the audience to kind of run with it. And I don't know, it was kind of amazing as it developed. And did you have a sense of what would happen?
Well, I think that was, I mean, the idea of Fluxus, not really knowing what would happen and not necessarily cluing people in or giving people direct instructions on how to participate within an intervention.
So you've made this intervention, this provocation, and then this organic audience of this particular day is going to do whatever they do different than yesterday or tomorrow might have been.
Or, you know, 40 years ago when it was originally written, the LA Art Girls actually were reinterpreting a score that had been part of the Fluxus movement.
And it was a little different 40 years earlier?
We were told that it was quite different. It was more things, well, it wasn't
more probably, things came off.
More things came off.
I guess there was some nudity involved.
There was nudity
involved,
perhaps.
And so do we have an idea of how unrolling paper in an audience creates nudity? Or
It was the 60s.
You had to be there, okay.
Yeah. Let's listen to the end bit of it.
Okay.
You're listening to Strange Angels on K-Beach Global Radio, across the globe at www.kbeach.org. This is Glenn Zuckman in the K-Beach studios visiting with Nancy Pop, Anne Harz, Kim Schoenstatt, and Essie Barnett of the LA Art Girls. Today it's String Theory, Following the Threads of Feminism with the LA Art Girls. You know, one thing that I thought was also so wonderful about this piece is, you know, in theater you have, or, you know, you've had audience participation and you kind of get people to go on stage and if it's the 60s, take their clothes off or whatever, but, or sing a song. And it's always so intimidating as an audience member, like, well, gosh, I paid to be on the other side of the wall, not to go through the window. And this was a piece where the audience inevitably participated, but it was very gentle. I mean, I never felt like, oh, now I'm on stage and I'm embarrassed or whatever. It just kind of very organically, you got involved with this paper and people started shaking it slowly at first and like just little waves would be made and then more vigorously. And then I think one of the pieces tore and then somebody took a piece and wadded it up and threw it to the other end of the room. And so it really became, you know, not quite that 60s nudity moment maybe, but it really became this big event without ever this sort of very, you know, heavy-handed pressure on anybody in the audience that you have to be in this or that space. So
that sounds like the model of the LA Art Girls in general.
Mm. Yeah, take it and run with it. Do what you will.
Right. We don't know what's going to happen.
No.
We really don't.
It's nice because we keep it so fluid and people come and go and participate in projects as their interest determines. And so it is a very organic group that is very experiential. The meetings are where we take follow that thread or take our lead just from the interactions that we have with one another.
And to that point, it's also even the idea of us talking about feminism when that kind of arose in a meeting that generated a lot of discussion even within the meeting.
Right.
And you might, I mean, I look at it like that. Okay, so someone comes to the group and says, oh, we have an opportunity to come to the radio and speak on feminism. And that generates this discussion within the group. What is there to talk about feminism? I'm a feminist. I'm not a feminist. This kind of whole discussion that actually, to my mind, like that's the group.
Right.
And like us coming here and actually doing this is another thing. But it's, there's the assignment of kind of value isn't necessarily in us. Oh, you know, it's like process, and product. It's not like that at all. It's way more, even the notion of where the value lies and what we're doing is very fluid.
And so we have some idea now of what the LA Art Girls are, but what's String Theory and what are the threads of feminism? Or how do you know if you're a feminist in the 21st century or not?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we would agree even in this room on a definition of feminism that would suit all of us. I'm not even sure.
That's true.
I know it,
and I think that might be the definition of feminism today.
Yeah. I know we can't define it within the Art Girls based on the arguments we've had about it. But
one point is to make it a viable word again, and we were talking about this idea that feminism was villainized the way that the word liberal was villainized.
So it was this empowering thing at some point in time,
and then it got co-opted. And it got shut down
by the bad guys.
People were afraid to use it because it created ideas in people's heads that were unappealing to a lot of women. Oh, well, you have to be a militant dyke to be a feminist or what have you. But it became this negative stereotype, became what the word feminist meant to a lot of people. And so,
and I guess Rush Limbaugh coined the term feminazi, right?
Yeah. But I've coined the term feminista.
Uh-huh.
Anne has this amazing t-shirt that is going to be part of an upcoming show that I know she wants to talk about with the LA Art Girls, that actually has a gorgeous feminista logo on it that I highly covet, that t-shirt, I have to tell you.
Well, we have we're part of a show that happens every year in Santa Monica called The Pink Show, which is an examination of the color pink. And the LA Art Girls...
So like a lot of Victoria's Secret or...
You know, not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
There you go.
Nice try, though.
Okay.
I proposed that the LA Art Girls and friends, meaning the LA Art Girls plus whoever they'd like to invite, different artists, to make t-shirts with the word feminist or feminism on the t-shirt, and then whatever else they wanted, whatever logo they wanted, if they wanted whatever image, anything. So it was really about the plurality of what, who got to invent the term and how they got to express the meaning of that term. And what we're doing is we're going to be exhibiting these t-shirts and selling them at the Pink Show to benefit girls' education in Afghanistan. So it's bringing about the idea that maybe feminism, maybe we can all argue about what it means to be a feminist in America right now, but part of being a feminist is helping women who are in need of that help desperately.
And when and where is the Pink Show?
The Pink Show is going to be at the in
Arena One Gallery in the Santa Monica Airport.
January 13th, and I believe it's running for 2 months, and it will be listed on the LA Art Girls website.
Where we could probably find out all kinds of exciting, important things.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm. And that website is?
LAArtGirls.com.
That's correct.
www.LAArtGirls.com.
Can we all say that together? Maybe not.
No, I don't think that. You know, we're all unique individuals. I don't know about that.
A basic definition of the LA Art Girls is that we do not speak in unison. Yes.
Well, except
we speak over each other.
Except that before I asked you to, you just did.
Yeah. It happens occasionally, crosses over, but it's one of those aha moments that cannot be repeated.
It's organic.
Dead or alive.
Very rare.
So on this notion of feminism, do we by any chance have a piece that would
Why, yes, we would, Glenn.
We actually have a number of pieces.
What would that be, Nancy?
I actually have created a piece for this interview on the definition of feminism. Feminism. Hmm. And so it's...
And it's called...
It's called feminism, I
the
suppose.
Definition.
It doesn't have a formal title.
I actually wanted to know who the voices are that we are hearing on the piece.
Well, there are several voices. The recognizable voices that you might hear, voices that you may have heard before, would be Bell Hooks, Judy Chicago, Jermaine Greer, Alice Walker, Gloria Steinem.
And then the other voices?
And the other voices are students at the high school where I teach.
So their ages are like 13 to 18?
Actually, they all say their age in the piece.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
Super.
So here's Feminism by LA art girl Nancy Pop.
I've been myself remembering the past, marking the present, and looking toward the future.
My name is Samantha, I'm 17.
Emily, 18.
Denise, 18.
Jared, and I'm 17.
Kirsten, and 17.
Lauren, and I'm 17.
I'm Elena, and I'm 17.
Gabrielle, 15.
My name is Zara, and I'm 16.
Lisa, and 19.
Evan, I'm 17.
I'm Eliza, and I'm 16.
Kendall, age 17.
Marcia, and I'm 17.
Elizabeth, and I'm 16.
I think feminism is female empowerment and a desire for female equality in society.
Believing in women and believing in their capabilities.
And understanding that everybody's equal, more empowerment for women.
It's not really a man-hater movement for saying they want them to drop down in society. It's just they want to be brought up and have their voices heard.
To me, feminism is fighting for equality for men and women. Then yeah, I would consider myself a feminist.
I didn't consider myself a feminist until about a year ago, but then I learned some things that changed my mind, and now I do. I realized it was more than just the thing my friends made fun of sometimes.
I think that women are entitled to the same rights as everyone else, and if that's feminism, then I guess I am.
It is our responsibility to know who we are, to give input, and to educate the entire culture to accurate perception of women. And that is our job as women, as feminists, and as human beings.
I don't feel like many girls my age do believe in feminism or try to fight for women's rights. Mm-hmm. I think most of the time they just don't care, don't think we can make an impact, and just automatically go with like the stereotypes of women.
I disagree with a lot of the feminist approaches, and I disagree with the current feminist movement and a lot of what they do. I think that the thing is, I feel like it's common sense. I think women are equal than men, and I think that if they want to pursue things that men pursue, they should just do it. I don't believe in feminism as a movement in a modern day world. I don't think it's very effective.
Women who say that other girls shouldn't wear makeup or dress nicely because they're just doing it for the men are really pushing people away, because some people like to do that for themselves.
We still are dividing our concerns into public and private, that magical division which has allowed what concerns women to be called cultural, what concerns men to be called political.
I come from a family of very strong women. On my mom's side, my great-grandmother fled from the Holocaust at the age of 13, and she used her best friend's passport, who had been killed, to cross the Atlantic Ocean, and she was crossing it illegally, and she didn't know where she was going, and she didn't speak English. But she ended up in New York and made her way to LA and actually became very successful. And she had my grandmother, who was, you know, eventually the breadwinner of her family, who was one of the first people to have a divorce, one of the first women to file a divorce in West LA. And then she had my mom, who is a very determined, hard worker, who, though she has the same job as my dad, she makes 30% less money. And so all of these people just kind of helped me to become aware of feminist causes.
I think definitely my sister inspired me. She's always been like really strong, outgoing, doesn't care what other people think about her, which is really different from me. I'm shy, and it's inspired me a lot to watch her in front of people and to see her not care what people think about her and her opinions and put them out there for people to hear.
Recently, I've been on the whole college search, and I've gone to see all female schools, and just the way they speak and the way they deliver their information across in person, they graduate from these schools and they have the confidence and they have the skills and they have the strength to actually go out and pursue their desires because they've been able to go to a school where they've held leadership roles.
It's very rare for an Orthodox woman to work, but my mother has always been very independent, and before she met my father, she was a very, very successful bankruptcy lawyer, and she still is to this day, and she's been a very positive role model. She makes more money than my father does, much more, and she's a very strong woman and a very powerful woman, so she's definitely been a role model.
My mom's a huge feminist. Like, she always points that stuff out to me and, like, talks about it. Like, even, like, if we're watching, like, the news at night, she'll always, like, point out how, like, if you look at, like, the man compared to the woman reporter, like, she just, like, has to, like, get so much more done up and, like, wear, like, tighter clothes than the guy. And the guy can be, like, some, like, fat old guy, but the girl has to be, like, young and, like, gorgeous. So she's definitely influenced my thought on that.
I was at the mountain school last year for fall semester, and a girlfriend there when I met her, her mother and father, her father's actually quite an active feminist as well, even though normally I would think of a feminist as a woman, but yeah, he counts as a feminist.
What does men coming to feminism look like today? We know what we thought it looked like 20 years ago. You know, all of those things to me are very deep questions for the millennia.
The beauty of feminism is that it can transcend the typical gender assignments that society pushes on people and divides people into categories, as opposed to kind of bringing people together under a common theme.
Because I feel like a certain sense of distinction between men and women is good. And I feel like feminists, my view of feminists, are people who want to abolish all those distinctions. And I think that that is dangerous to this the social fabric. And I think that people regard it as a threat.
There are definitely innate differences between men and women. There's no way that men and women can be completely, absolutely equal. And it'd be sort of ridiculous to ignore that. It's never really going to be completely equal. And I don't know, I guess it's something you just accept, but it's not necessarily bad.
What's been going on in the last 30 years is we've been trying to understand what gender politics are and whether we can make them coherent, whether we can make common cause with women the world over. I think we could make common cause with women the world over, but not as long as we are identified with the dominant culture in the countries that we come from.
And I guess it is different for other cultures because America has like this ideal view of like how women should be or how they should act. So it kind of makes us have like a different or maybe like a skewed image of like what womanism or feminism actually is compared to like other cultures who may not have as many rights as us and may not experience what we do.
There are multiple layers for black feminists because they're humanists. They have to fight for the rights of being a person on the same plane first and foremost.
It would be interesting to learn what women from lots of different cultures say about feminism, you know, in a paragraph sense or longer, and then see if there's any common ground between all of the different roots. If there was, that might be a better definition of feminism to see, or a more basic one.
The position and social status of a woman is absolutely dictated by the cultural system within where the woman lives in. I mean, if you got a lot of Muslim countries where women have different roles in society. So I think that feminism needs to be taken into cultural context. I think trying to change cultures is foolish. And I think that these cultures have been here for thousands of years. And I feel like for the most part, the women who participate in these cultures are happy. Now, the problem is when women who don't want to participate in these cultures that are forced to. You know, you've got women in Africa who are being raped and, you know, mutilated and such, and in Muslim countries as well, in Afghanistan. I'm an Afghani Jew, and, you know, I've heard all the burqas, and I've heard all these stories about women who were beaten. That's what we can change. But when women are content, I don't think there's a reason to change.
Bessie Smith best expressed our feeling of being women who were free and women who intended to stay that way.
It is not enough to be able to say, look, Madeleine Albright's a woman. We can fire shells tipped with uranium into Iraq or into Yugoslavia. We can wreak as much havoc as men. Therefore, we have it all. If that is the point, then feminism is useless. It is the most profoundly conservative cause that was ever invented.
The problem isn't about what wages people are earning. It's about whether their skills are valued in society. And I believe that women can't do the same things that men can, and men can't do the same things that women can. And so I don't think that everyone should be treated the same. I think everyone should be respected for what they bring to the table. And I think that's what feminism is about.
I don't think that there's anything a woman can choose to do that would put her at odds with feminism.
My argument is not that feminism failed, but that feminism has yet to begin.
Special thanks to Pacifica Radio Archives for use of their archival materials.
You're listening to Strange Angels on KBeach Global Radio across the globe at www.kbeach.org. That was LA art girl Nancy Pop's Feminism. I guess question answered. I guess we know now. That was extensive and amazing.
Thank you. Thank this.
That's a beautiful piece, Nancy.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the thing that I thought about this piece was so often women are deprived of their voice. They're not allowed to have a voice or a say. I mean, so many things. I listened to a lot of footage from a lot of really wonderful feminists when I was researching this piece, and so many things rang true in what they were saying. Particularly that women's voices are not heard in what Germaine Greer termed the halls of power, that women don't really have a strong say. We have no official representation per se in government, although that may change because we have our first Nancy
female
Pelosi.
Speaker of the House.
As of this morning,
of
today.
This morning.
Who's talking about a woman's job is to clean house, and that term now not meaning clean house, but clean up the House of Representatives.
That's
go
right.
Nancy.
Yes.
So
there's the new bumper sticker.
Uh-huh.
That's right. Woman's job is to clean the house. But it's interesting to see that those things are still not as uncommon as we might want them to be. So I giving people a voice.
So just to put a finer point on that previous comment, we don't yet have a woman president, but we do now have the second, third person in line to be president is
the highest
Nancy
elected
Pelosi.
Official of,
in American history.
A female elected official.
Although you do know that the United States has already had an openly gay vice president.
We did?
Yeah, you knew that, right?
Who was that?
One of Andrew Jackson's vice presidents died in office, didn't live very long, but Andrew Jackson used to call a guy Miss Nancy and the whole thing.
Is that where Nancy Boy came from?
Maybe.
Is that earlier?
I have to get back to you.
Nancy
on that.
Boy was British. I don't know. That is so cool.
Miss Nancy. A little bit of
trivia there for those of us on the liberal side.
So what else? You brought a whole bunch of pieces today. Yeah. What else should we be listening to?
Should we do Office Ophelia?
Oh, let's listen to Lee's piece. It's wonderful. This is Lee McCarthy.
I used to work at a place called Creative Artists, but I never got a chance to do anything creative. Except when I went to what I referred to as my studio, the copy room. There, I secretly made a series of self-portraits titled Office Ophelia. I got a rush because I secretly hoped that someone would discover me, face down in the copy machine. Maybe someone would realize that I was creative and I could escape my dreary existence as an administrative assistant. Or maybe I would get fired and put out of my misery. It's strange, though, because everyone at the office just thought I was dumb and lazy. What they didn't know was that I was doing art on the sly. So when I had my first big show at the Whitney Biennale, I bumped into a former coworker who was shocked to discover she had just been admiring my work.
Lee McCarthy's Office Ophelia. You know, that's so funny to think about a place it's actually called Creative Artists and how many people who work there are ever given the opportunity to be creative. But I mean, that's sort of an arts question in general, isn't it? That, you know, I mean, plenty, particularly in arts administrative kind of roles, not to diss on any segment, but it seems to me that we have a lot of people who work in the arts, but do they live artistic lives?
Yeah. It's interesting that it's kind of the further you go up in the hierarchy, the more distance you become. So again, it's that question of what's valued,
mm-hmm.
what's seen as important.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in an important role, what are you doing? Are you able to have that time? Or is it seen as frivolous once you get up into the echelons of administrative hell?
Oh, like, why are you still farting around making art?
Right, right.
Well, you know, it's interesting you said a little bit a moment ago about women not being heard. And wasn't sort of the postmodern era all about more voices, more inclusiveness, more egalitarian?
Yeah, but the way you talk about it is though we're done now.
In my official art history handbook, it says that postmodernism is over and we're doing something different now. So I assume that means that project's complete, no?
I think we need a do-over of postmodernism.
A postmodern do-over?
Yeah, well, apparently we need to go back and revisit it and resample it and regurgitate it.
But I thought postmodernism was modernism revisited and resampled and regurgitated. Yeah.
Apparently, we're repeating that process.
We're stuck.
We're in a loop.
We're in Groundhog Day.
We're in a loop.
Wow.
We're scratching. Want to scratch for us, Essie?
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay.
What's left?
Twats. $24.24
In the United States in 2003, for every $1 males earned, women earned 76 cents on average.
What's Left by Essie Barnett. You're listening to Strange Angels on KBeach Global Radio across the globe at www.kbeach.org. It's String Theory, following the threads of feminism with the LA Art Girls today on Strange Angels. So it seems like I heard that ages ago, and that can't still be true in 2006, can it?
I think it's up to 82 now.
In 3 years, picked up?
No, I think it's still at 76.
Is it 76?
I saw some great graffiti somewhere on the highway, and somebody had just written 76, 76, 76, 76 on all these piers.
And it was not like an oil company thing.
Oh, I guess
Get your head out of feminism. Come on.
I think it was.
I think my source is Hillary Mushkin.
Yay.
That's what she told me last night. But I didn't get the most recent update.
2003 is pretty recent.
It's a 3 year lag. No,
our census data lags 10 years behind, so you're still in the loop.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. It's really relevant to the LA Art Girls as a group because we all have to work really hard in order to support our habits and
creative habits.
Our creative habits. You know, part of the group is being a loose affiliation of female artists. This idea of supporting each other in the art making process is really invaluable because it is easy to get sort of like discouraged because of that 76 or that 24 cents you're not getting, you know,
or a lot of other things you're not getting,
or what Lee said in her piece about, you know, being viewed as, you know,
Stupid and lazy
because she was secretly making art. Who hasn't been through that?
I like the phrase she uses, art on the sly.
Mm. Yeah. Absolutely.
And it, you know, it may well be that that's even a bigger problem for women. But again, I mean, to me, that's just, right. I mean, that's a culture thing.
It's a capitalist problem.
It's a capitalist problem.
It's a capitalist problem. It's true. It's a patriarchal capitalist problem.
Is that what it is?
Think so.
I always suspected it was.
Well, you have now.
So now it's been
confirmed.
But we're not like getting out of patriarchal capitalism anytime soon, are we?
I don't think so.
No, but I think, I mean, if I may, I do think something, a model like what the LA Art Girls are doing, which is, you know, hard and contentious. I mean, it's a lot of time. It takes time away from earning that 76 cents to come to an LA Art Girls meetings. And it's contentious when we're in the LA Art Girls meetings. We're not, you know, it's all light and flowers. And though we call it a tea, mm-hmm. there's a lot of like arguing, healthy arguing, I think. And I think it presents, and the way that we're defying definition and all these other things, I think it presents alternative. I mean, we're on the side of presenting alternative models and investigating, at least, alternative models to cope with the inherent patriarchal capitalism that we're kind of stuck with at this point anyway.
And so if we talk about this idea that the LA Art Girls are based on this model of generosity and giving each other, helping each other get shows and things like that, I mean, that's part of that model of generosity is also, you know, arguing amongst ourselves is not this airy fairy kind of, we're all so sweet to one another at all. I mean, we're pretty, you know,
well,
can
we're
be
professionals.
Pretty hard-ass.
Exactly. I mean, everybody in the LA Art Girls is a working professional artist with a day job for the most part. And so, yeah, I mean, I think everybody brings that intensity, that professional intensity to the table when we're arguing and disagreeing about certain items.
Yeah, I like that.
And many of us teach. So then we have strong opinions.
So you and so you're able to also pollute young minds with
which we greatly enjoy.
Your post patriarchal, post capitalist
rhetoric.
Propaganda
model. So threatening.
Spread it around.
But it's interesting because if we talk about feminism and that question of arguing, I mean, I think that even if you go back to the 60s and the struggles of feminism and feminist movements, it's very difficult to embrace that kind of structure that includes dissension. And that's not an easy thing.
That's what inclusiveness has to be.
Yeah.
For us.
That idea of interdependency.
Yeah.
That idea of interdependency. And actually some interviews I'd been listening to in preparation for the project that I made
Joan Borushenko talking about the psychological makeup of women, how women develop in adolescence, and that the models for healthy women are interdependency, and, you know, the boundaries between self and others. And that's becomes, you know, something that they struggle, women struggle with their whole life.
Isn't interdependency like a, for healthy Homo sapiens?
I believe so. Yeah. Exactly. But to truly manifest that as a professional adult in the adult world, I think that involves a certain amount of trust. I know the last meeting we had, there was a certain discussion of how something turned out and was it professional enough? And, you know, I personally liked it. I personally didn't like it, blah, blah, blah. But there has to be a certain amount of trust that the others you're engaging with, that you're dependent on, are rising to the highest level that they can, just as you are, in order to move forward and to engage.
Although, I mean, even the word professional seems so funny because, again, going back to that Getty event, the presentations, which had, you know, sort of some great ideas in them, but were a little dry. I mean, they were...
Okay, traditional.
They were tremendously professional, and then you went outside for a brush of fresh air, and there you all were being, you know, I don't want to say unprofessional, but playful and engaged in some other kind of space than...
But then don't say unprofessional. I think Anne's point of how words get villainized. I mean, professional is just being villainized in that kind of... It's been given a bad rap that it means boring.
It's well, it is it,
right? I mean,
how about sly?
I mean, isn't
we were sly. Isn't,
like the sly?
Isn't an amateur someone who does something because they love it, and a professional is someone who does something because they get paid for it?
I mean, that sounds like a textbook definition. I was more working with the idea that there's a level of intensity and commitment. You know, being an artist and being a professional artist, as I was calling us all. I mean, I think that's just like we get shows, we do shows, we meet deadlines.
Real working artists.
Like, yeah, I mean, there's
raise a great question because, like, my practice is a lot of weird ass Oh, can I say that?
I guess you just did.
A lot of weird interactive work at times that is not really saleable. It's not very commercial in terms of being sellable, but I don't think I'm unprofessional.
Well, I think that, I mean, just to give the listening audience an understanding of what we've done, just this year, I think in the past year we had a show at QED Gallery in Culver City in which we made, we remade the movie Doctor Strangelove as basically a video exquisite corpse in which we all remade a segment of the movie without really knowing what the person who was remaking the segment before or after was going to, how they were going to handle it at all. And I didn't see the final piece until the opening, and it was really, really funny and.
So actually everybody did a video project?
Everybody, or? And I have never made a video, and I made my first video for that piece, and, you know, just a little short segment, and it was just such a great experience, because first of all, it gave me the opportunity to try my hand at making video, and also the fact that it worked out as this idea of a video exquisite corpse, I think was really, it was a unique piece, and... then we had a show at Anna Helwing. Actually, I think that was at the same time.
You guys have had a really busy year.
We've had a really busy year. Other shows we had. We did the piece at the Getty, which was during the conference, and then the next evening we did a performance alongside other performers such as Yvonne Rainer and Martin Kersels, and now we're going to be doing, we have a show right now at Angles in Santa Monica, and that will be up until, I think, the 23rd.
I think that's right.
23rd. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
and that's called Hysteria.
Right. And we've done a show, we did Hysteria a show at Deluxe. Lace. As well.
I do prefer the Deluxe Hysteria.
Yeah. Referencing Def Leppard.
Mm-hmm. And then one of the interesting things we did was a kind of art girls meeting / panel at Dangerous Curve, a gallery space called Dangerous Curve, where we kind of, it was half conducting a meeting and half, once again, this discussion on the topic of feminism. Which I do think, I don't know if we talked about this earlier, but that right now seems to be a moment in which this notion of feminism, what it entails, who it entails, is being reexamined with a number of shows in Los Angeles and New York, with a feminism conference in New York in January, that it does seem to becoming, you know, part of the zeitgeist right now, which I think is great. You know, it's a good opportunity.
You know, actually, it's interesting. I'm sort of tangential, but LACMA currently has a big fashion fiber show up.
Right.
And Mocha, in, I think, 2 weeks, is opening a big fashion fiber show. And, you know, I wonder if in part fiber has always sort of been a little bit discounted as, oh, that's like women's art.
Craft.
I don't know, because Kippy Stroud at the fabric workshop, that stuff's pretty hardcore.
Yeah. I think there's always been, fabric is interesting because I actually know of a program in Belfast, Ireland, that is a fabric, well, not, they call it fiber, mm-hmm. fiber new media program. Yeah, they've somehow figured out a way that they're, conceptually, they've got a really interesting rhetoric about fiber involved as part of new media, where they take it literally, because they're like an arts and design school. And this, I think, also has to do a lot with the rise of design within the art world as a valuable aspect of it, and how it integrates within the notion of networks and networks within the idea of new media and new technologies.
So I think we're going to play another LA Art Girls audio piece.
Yay.
You want to introduce this, Kim?
Sure.
Which piece are we playing?
Kasha's.
Excellent.
Actually, Essie can do this more eloquently. And it's 50 seconds long, so it's pretty short.
Are we doing the calling?
Yeah.
So this is Catherine Daly. This is really interesting. Catherine Daly is a writer predominantly and kind of
poet,
mm-hmm. Kind of presenting the diversity of the LA Art Girls, where we range from poets to performers to painters, anyone who does anything with P. And this is a piece around square dance calling. I don't know if it has a title. Oh, it's called Venus and Mars.
Venus and Mars. Get in the star promenade, men on inside with left hand. Number one lady, lead to the right to start a separate right-hand star. Ladies follow in session, leaving the men in their star. As the stars turn, number one couple, do a right-hand pull-by. Put the man in the lady's left-hand star. Ladies in the men's right-hand star. Number one man, pick up his partner. Other men, back to the original promenade. Number one girl, peel to the right to start a right-hand star. Number two, number three, number four girl, join the right-hand star.
Venus and Mars by Catherine Daly on Strange Angels here on KBeach Global Radio across the globe at www.kbeach.org. This is Glenn Zuckman at KBeach Radio visiting with the LA Art Girls, Nancy Pop, Ann Harz, Kim Schoenstatt, and Essie Barnett. So that was Catherine Daly's Venus and Mars.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've got a couple more audio pieces as well.
Actually, before we launch into those, one other question I wanted. Anne, a friend of yours, Janet Owen, I think you and she have talked about the idea of LA Art Girls.
Oh, she's been giving me such hell.
She's been giving you hell, okay.
She's giving me hell. But now, it's been fascinating.
Now, is she an LA Art Girl, or is she just an outside provocateur?
Not, because she's a provocateur, and my next-door neighbor. And one of the questions that has come up, especially since we've been talking about feminism a lot as a group, is this idea that we call ourselves the LA Art Girls, and that's somewhat problematic. And
how so?
Well,
I don't see it as being a problem at all.
I don't mind it being a problem, but I do think it's a problem. I think actually people have dropped out of the group because of it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it's been, but you know, it's just
But girls has such a great history with like the Riot Girls. Mm.
The Gorilla Girls.
I know.
All these girl groups.
Plus, it's so much easier to be underestimated.
I don't necessarily... Well,
Talk about a provocateur in our midst.
Surprising us again, Kim.
Kim has bronchitis. That didn't count.
I mean, but some of my thinking has been, you know, well, when she first brought it up, I said, well, I don't know. And she's like, well, it seems to be diminutive. And why would you want to be the girls viewed that way, and et cetera, et cetera. And why all girls? Like, why not men? Why? But, you know, I think we talked about this at the Dangerous Curve panels, that we simply needed the support. We were a bunch of women who needed the support of other women. Mm-hmm. And I think that's accomplished easily by having an all women's group. But the LA Art Girls, it was just a name that we didn't know. I don't think when we were starting this group that it would become what it is. It was just kind of a convenient name. I don't think we thought about it too much.
For each other.
It is a term of affection.
Hey, girl.
Exactly.
Well, I also wonder, though, you know, in Nancy's piece, one of the people says, well, feminists are like just all man-hating lesbians or something like that, right? And you know, the idea that...
Yeah,
that,
what of it? That
work, you got a problem with that?
Works for me. Well, if that was the only requirement, I'd be a member. But, you know, that if it's too kittenish and, you know, can you be liberated and empowered... but I mean, is it okay to be sexy and have fun?
Yes.
It is.
Okay. Of course.
Okay.
I'm just, you know, yes. I actually
great,
think
let's move on.
Give me the choice. Depends on how I feel, what, you know, whatever damn day, you know?
Okay, Ashley, thank you.
I do want to, I think that there's something interesting, though, that Anne's kind of, when we talk about, oh, you know what? You can hear the sound of the doggies panting.
I know. They've been snoring too. Sorry.
Anyway, when Anne was talking, you're right, they are distracting, but I love it. Anne was talking about a group of women who needed the support of being together out of grad school. Where do we go for these kinds of support? And I didn't bring that magazine. I said I would, but I wanted to raise this point that I think it's a really interesting as a teacher. And I know as many of us in this room are teachers also, as well as artists and, you know, the many hats we wear. I see a lot of, and in fact, the school I teach at our ratio is, 3 women to every man. I see a lot more young women entering into the field of art right now.
So then your school actually pays women $2.25 for every dollar they pay a man.
Well, they don't pay them anything. They have to go to school there.
Okay, never mind.
But a good point.
I was trying.
I know, it's a good point. So it does seem like, and this was exemplified to me in a recent magazine article in which they had a number of, it was, if I say it, they'll know who it is. They had a number of art, they had something called Art School Confidential, in which it talked to a number of young artists coming into the art world after grad school or after, even now, some after undergrad. And they were, there was, I think, 10 in total, 8 women, 2 guys. Then right after that article, there were the magazine's serious interviews with major articles, and it was 4 men in a row, boom, boom, boom.
Who were faculty members.
And established as artists, right. And that it does seem like right now there's this general shift of the people in, like you were talking about, this notion of the voice, and the people in the position that have the power right now are kind of still... We're still kind of in this kind of male-dominated scenario, and that there's this new crop coming up. And one of the great things LA Art Girls fills is this kind of like, how do you not only bridge that point after school where you're trying to enter into the real world, but how do you do it within a scenario that the cards are stacked against you?
How do you extend the ladder a little bit or break through that little bit, that glass ceiling that's still there?
Yeah, Kim's giving me a look.
I'm giving you a look.
She is giving me a look.
Just a little bit, because I think, I mean, it's easy to say we're in a male-dominated world. And, I mean, I'm an art geek, so I don't get out much other than the art world. We live in a city where there are 3 major museums for contemporary art. Los Angeles County Museum, of art, Mocha, Hammer.
I wouldn't count LACMA as a museum for contemporary art, but
okay.
But Mocha
we'll
and
call
Hammer
it a museum.
Two and a half.
Two and a half. And until just recently, two of them were run by women.
Yeah, it's true.
There is also an interesting, speaking of just women in the teaching field, there's more women teaching than ever before, especially in universities and colleges and institutions of higher learning, shall we say. But interesting, it might have changed a little bit, but about 40 to 45% of the positions, teaching positions, are held by women, but just over 10% of them are tenured. So it's, you know.
Oh, that is interesting.
It's 10% of the women faculty are tenured.
You mean 90%
of the male faculty
of tenured faculty are men.
Good God.
And
but
also,
that's a slow moving thing, right?
Very slow. Right. But, it takes generations, but it's still worth noting that that's
the status quo then.
So I look, for example, to me, most important photographer of the postmodern era, Cindy Sherman, Mona Hatoum, pretty much in every, there's an article on her in every issue of Sculpture magazine.
What was that amazing thing that Silton brought up at Dangerous Curves?
Which
she
thing?
Brought that list that was just wonderful.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of had a problem with just numbers and statistics and lists, and
it's true. It doesn't take into account the experiential reality.
But it's also a very male way of looking at it. I mean, it's just a very like we can quantify this, and it's that.
This
easy.
Isn't patriarchal capitalism rearing its ugly head again, is it?
No.
But I mean, I think that's why we can all talk from our own experience, in the sense that I felt like I needed a network of support after I left school. And I felt really fortunate that I happened to be invited to an LA Art Girl meeting and chose to stay. And, you know, it's been a really important part of my life and my understanding of the art world, and also like my, you know, sort of system of morale, keeping up my morale through the art world and being, you know.
Because I think what you're talking about, even though, yes, these institutions have in the past had females in positions of power, I still think that what I'm referring to is more like an institutional kind of agenda that is in the process of shifting, is in the process of changing, but it's not geared yet towards something that is on a level playing field, as they say. You know, I still think it's like there's a kind of auto response, a default setting that hasn't been lifted yet.
It's almost we've dealt with that. Thanks. We know about that. Thank you very much.
Some of it's that, and some of it's, you know.
Well, that's sort of part of the anti-feminist perspective, right? Is that, yeah, okay, we had that already.
Yeah, we took care of it.
It's done.
It's done. Thank you.
And what we need to, I think, why we need to remind ourselves that it's not really done, and it's not done, and what we have is very fragile, and what we have needs to be constantly reinvigorated through new definitions, through people taking on the idea and challenging, well, what does it mean to be a feminist, and what does it mean to work with a group of women now from my perspective and from my experiences?
Creating their own
definitions.
And
what we have is fragile and imperfect and incomplete, but from the glass half full perspective, it certainly seems like there are a lot more voices being heard in our culture than yesteryear.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Yeah. Okay. But I mean, I just.
But I mean, I
that
think
was a great.
But
big
maybe
okay.
It's because of certain groups like us and the support that we give one another.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things we had talked about is the threads of feminism, and so there were, you know, first there's the right to vote, and then there are other issues, and the issue of like bringing it to the attention.
Now, when you say right to vote, are you saying that women didn't get to vote when the American Republic was founded?
That's true, Glenn.
You play such a great devil's advocate, Glenn.
It's true, and the women's suffrage had to happen, and we got the right
and
to
that
vote
only,
eventually.
And that happened, I think, about 100 years into the whole experiment of being the United States of America.
Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, right. All men are created equal.
Yeah.
Got
it.
All white white, land-owning men are created
white, rich,
in rural
men.
Societies.
But it's interesting, you know, I mean, the institutions at large do tend to be slow-moving, slow to change, more conservative than the populations that they serve, to preserve their own power. And they change from the bottom up. They change from people pushing underneath like a, you know, crusty lava flow.
I had the most amazing experience, which is not about feminism, but, you know, a few years ago, two rather well-known Cambridge area universities both asked the question, should we open our courseware to the world? And and MIT said, we're going to put MIT online. The world can access MIT's materials. And at the same time, pretty much, Harvard said, you know what? Harvard is only available to the Harvard elite. Our material is not going to be available to the world. Okay, so that's the story a couple of years ago. Dot, dot, dot. There's now a center called the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at the Harvard Law School, which all I do now is listen to audio programs from the Berkman Center. They've completely changed my world and my thinking about everything, or advanced it from wherever it was. And so Harvard originally wanted not to take the MIT model.
And it leaked.
Because of a couple of wacky law professors, Harvard is now way in front of MIT on this openness, democracy, interactivity, inclusiveness thing. But it's not barbarians at the gates. It's a couple of anarchists inside the gates that have turned things around.
Yeah.
That's nice. A really good model. Exactly.
That's encouraging.
I just wanted to add a little bit more about just the word girl and how it continues to be problematic for the LA Art Girls, but it's a problem we're dealing with. And I think that Nancy said it the best when it's a term of endearment and camaraderie and friendship rather than whatever, however it could be used negatively to describe a group of women who choose to call themselves girls. You know, we are a group of women.
Well, you know, the funny thing
is called the LA Art Girls.
You know, my initial exposure to the LA Art Girls was this event at the Getty, where there were, as we've said, these I hate to keep dissing these really wonderful presentations, but they were a little bit dry. And the LA Art Girls work was so playful and engaging. And, you know, I may have on occasion gone by the name Art Boy. And if I did, my slogan was never ask a man to do a boy's job. And to me, and right, it's maybe less loaded in the male case, but to me, because I don't know if I would say, I don't know if I would say never ask a woman to do a girl's job. That might be some other thing, but
right, that would be perceived as incredibly negative.
Well,
but for me, there's the sense that
who says
that
it.
This yeah. notion of being a man is such a rigid, formalized thing, and that a boy can be playful in some other right. way.
And girls can be playful, but they don't. But they've deprived of their power. In order to have that flexibility.
Well, but I mean, I think, you know, me saying Art Boy, never ask a man to do a boy's job. I mean, again, maybe it's less loaded as a male, but to me, there's a certain giving away of power in that, but I'm saying that's a power that I don't want. I'm not even interested in that.
Well, exactly. I think it goes back to Nancy's point of choice. It's if I choose to have power and call myself a girl, I get to. If you choose to have power and call yourself a boy, not have power and call yourself a boy, or flap your arms and call yourself a boy, you get to.
Self-determination. Right. You know, if you have someone in a position of power who calls you girl, boy.
Okay, so it's one thing to take a label for yourself and quite another thing to have someone
self-determination.
Slap
and again,
it on
absolutely
you.
The key. And that's one thing that we neglect in this society to give to others. You know, we insist on the right to be self-determining, but then we forget that that's the most important thing that we can allow or encourage others to do.
Because
you know, be it gay, be it straight, be it transgendered, be it bi, be it.
So are we just back to tolerance 101?
Well, I don't think it's tolerance 101.
I think it goes
like
back
to tolerance 210. Yeah, okay.
I actually think it goes back. I think it goes to trust again. I think it goes to this idea that I trust that if I give you, if I'm able to let go and be not have to impose my notion of how things should be on you, I'm trusting that you'll do the same for me. And that it's not going to overtake what I think I want, how I want to be.
Sucker.
Well, you know, my whole view is that I found the word woman really problematic. And I remember, you know, when I was in college and all sorts of, you know, problems with the word woman and
Wait,
the
how?
Feminists were writing woman with M-Y-N and, My favorite was that a group of women started calling themselves wombats instead of women. And then it was like, oh, well, that's a womb of man. And then I remember having to read all of that horrible Victorian medical stuff, what is woman and how women were inferior. And it became this incredibly loaded term that was really, I mean, for me personally, but I think that each person in the LA Art Girls has a different story to tell about their relationship to those words.
You know, then there's the Alice Walker's use of the term womanist. Mm-hmm. Womanism, because right. She said, when I think of feminism or feminist, I think white. I think of a white woman. You know, that's right. I don't identify. Mm-hmm. So I'm going that's to use the term bad. Womanist, because I feel that it's stronger. It doesn't have the feminine undertones. And I'm in this great tradition, this American tradition of inventing a new word when the word that is in common usage doesn't fit for me. It's self-determination. It's mm-hmm. empowering. And I think it just offers an option and a variation. No one's saying, you know, feminism can't be used. But
And what we're doing, you know, what my project with the LA Art Girls and the show Pink is all about, creating, you know, recreating a word, seeing if we can recreate it, seeing what happens if it's redefined by a plurality of voices, and seeing what that would look like, quite literally.
Now, I might be paraphrasing slightly here, but Donna Haraway sort of said, let's all become cyborgs and just forget about that whole gender thing. Is that like a good idea? Is that where we're headed?
I think you're right. You are paraphrasing.
Am I?
Well, now she's just talking about dogs.
Yes, the manifesto of this account,
which I believe her on that. So,
I think it's less about let's forget about this gender thing. I think it's Haraway's kind of notion, to my mind, has a lot to do with looking at the other and looking at the notion of the feminine through the eyes of the other, the cyborg through the or as the eyes of the other, and this idea of other having a non-pejorative kind of place in the vocabulary and in the ideology as well.
That other is the same position as the word escapes me. The privilege position. The other is equal to the privilege position.
Right.
So that you these don't have a privilege position per se, but many. Many equal positions.
I mean, I know
that doesn't sound likely.
I'll tell you. I know that this is going to get me in trouble with a couple LA Art Girls, but most of what I've said today is going to get me in trouble with a few LA Art Girls. But I mean, I can't help it. I really feel that this is a very Deleuzian kind of approach to the world that has to do with immanence, and you know, this multiple kind of choice. This idea of choice again, that there's these models, these ideas of ways of looking at how you are in the world to choose from, rather than this kind of hierarchical structure that you like go up this, you know, weird little model of a ladder that just doesn't, I just think it's boring.
Well, I think that's, I mean, when I brought up the medical issue before, right. I brought that up to illustrate that women shouldn't be seen as just, how do I put this? I mean, part of feminism is saying we want equal rights, we want equal pay, we want to be equal. But then the next step as part of feminism is recognizing that we're not the same. We are individual. We are biologically a different organism. And
right.
we work different, and we think different, and we move different.
So we're not all dreaming of wearing unisex clothes and...
Although a world inhabited by unitards, it does sound slightly
some advantages.
Unisex unitards.
I always.
Can we just color code?
I like that, and then take that idea that.
But artists only ever wear black anyway.
But
right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think what this understanding of plurality could mean is that it's not. I mean, it's not just. Male, female, it's just, it is about individuality.
Right.
And let's talk about individuality rather than, well, women are different than men. But
right. Oh, you mean,
human.
So instead of having a convenient shorthand,
being
I have
humanist.
To evaluate every
let's
single human being on their
again.
Individually?
Isn't that
damn,
a bitch?
Yes.
That's a lot of words.
You know what?
Yeah. You know,
quality,
it might be worth
not quantity.
That was Nancy.
So So he who dies with the most toys does not win?
Well, you're just going to have to figure out
they have to be well
them.
Played with
depends
toys?
Depends on who buries you. Mm-hmm. Not if she takes all your toys and actually gives them to her friends and starts playing with them herself.
Mm. Or melts them down and makes something else out of them. Okay.
Makes off art to the moon.
And slyly makes art with them.
While being viewed as stupid and lazy. Just give me a copy room.
I make art with your inheritance.
So, on that note,
thank you for having us here.
That's it. We want out. Bell. Let us out.
Thank you.
Like
bye-bye.
Thank Glenn Phillips.
Wow.
Glenn Zuckman, you rock.
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, Nancy Pop, Ann Harz, Kim Schoenstatt, and Essie Barnett of the LA Art Girls, 4/30 or one whole of the Art Girls, depending, I guess, on your frame of reference. Thanks for visiting, Strange Angels. So tell me the website again and where I can find out about all these events coming up.
www.laartgirls.com.
And we have the Pink Show coming up January 13th.
And we also have a show at Angles right
show
now
at Angles
in Santa Monica.
Until November 25th.
Somewhere
and
in there.
We also have a lecture that we're going to be giving, talk on our work at the Getty Museum on December 8th as part of their Works and Progress series.
Can't miss that.
That would be very interesting.
So do you have some exciting final audio piece for us to go out with?
Yes, we do.
Stephanie Allspot.
The spirit of play.
Oh, she's done a duet, hasn't she?
Oh, yes.
And who's she singing with?
This is a sing-along with Morrissey.
This is Stephanie and Morrissey in Karaoke Bliss.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Okay, Nancy, Ann, Kim, Essie, thanks for visiting Strange Angels today.
Thank you
so much.
And thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Because America, your belly's too big. And I love ya, I just wish you'd stay where you is. Oh, 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 in America, the land of the free, they said, and of opportunity. In a just and truthful way. But where the president is never black, female or gay, and until that day got nothing to say to me to help me believe. Oh, in America, they brought you the hamburger. Oh, well, America, you know where your hamburger. And don't you wonder why in Estonia they say, hey you, big fat pig, big fat pig, big fat pig. And then scan the world, and a humorless smile with no warmth within greets the world. And I have got nothing to offer you. Oh, no, 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 no. This heart.